Welcome to the NBA Trades Podcast. I'm your host, Raphael, and today I have a special guest. He is a staff writer covering the Indiana Pacers for The Athletic. It's Scott Agnes. Some of the conversation of this podcast was cut off due to technical difficulties, and so we'll start off with a topic of Miles Turner and his improvement, so check it out.
I feel like that's become like the more they really do have a chance to, you know, win 50 games, depending on some wins and whatever happens the rest of the year. And they have a chance at home court advantage, which is a really big factor in the first round series. Another player, like, I feel like that has been interesting this year has been Miles Turner, just because, you know, he gets the contract extension and he's had a really solid year. I think when you look at his per-game numbers, they don't really pop off the chart, probably besides, like, block shots and maybe three-point shooting. But he's had a really improved year, I think, in terms of just anchoring that team's defense and just as a rim protector. He's always been a really interesting player, I think, in terms of people feeling like he's going to become, like, a star. And last year, he was sort of expected to become the star of the team, and then Victor Oladipo sort of rose to fame. What has his growth been like, and just sort of him trying to figure out what his role as a player in this league is?
Yeah, Miles has a positive trajectory. Just yesterday, he turned 23 years old. So if you consider that, Miles isn't even in his prime just yet. He's got that contract extension. I think that was huge for him mentally, to kind of put that behind him and give him confidence going into this season. And he's led the league in blocks per game and total blocks all season long, enough, I believe, to warrant consideration for Defensive Player of the Year. Now, I don't think he will get it, but he certainly should finish, in my opinion, top five within the league in terms of Defensive Player of the Year for what he is able to do. He's that last line of the defense. He's that safety net, and the defense for this Pacers team has been completely different and much weaker. When he has missed time throughout the season, he had a broken nose and several other things that has caused him to miss 2 and 3 games here. And when he's been out, you've seen that defense suffer because he's just a boss around the rim. I mean, even if he's not getting those 2 or 3 blocks per game, he's impacting 5, 6, 7 more shots and allows for his teammates as well to be more aggressive on defense because they know he's back there holding it down around the rim.
Yeah, And I think, like, it's been really interesting seeing his growth and him willing to shoot more threes. I felt like that was always something in his career. What was he going to be, more of a mid-range shooter or more of a three-point shooter? And it's something that's been asked of him a lot. I think with him playing with Domantas Sabonis together, is he going to be more of a floor spacer? And also just sort of as the league progresses towards more big men shooting threes, is he going to be willing to step out and take more threes, more so than that 15 to 18 footer? I feel like he's taking a lot more threes than he ever has at this point right now. What do you think about that sort of that part of his game and what he's going to end up being? Is he going to be more of a three-point shooter or more of a mid-range shooter?
I like it, because it really opens things up more for the Pacers. And it's funny you say that, and I kind of agree. It feels like he's taking more per game, but he's really not taking too much more. He's making a little bit more, at least 1 3-pointer per game. And I think we're seeing several things. For one, they love this pick-and-roll set, right? And so in playing, being a very pick-and-roll-heavy team, oftentimes we see the defense sag off, and so there's Miles right at the high post, able to knock down one of those 15, 17 footers. That's kind of a better shot, I think, we've seen for Domantas Sabonis, who's much better around the rim. He's more skilled, better footwork. But with Miles, I think he's a better guy out on the perimeter, mainly when he stays in his shot. Sometimes he'll turn around or lean out of his shot, lean back. That's where he'll often miss. But he's become a solid three-point shooter, I think. Really dependable, approaching 40% on the season. So he can keep that up. That's really the new NBA, believe it or not, is center stretching out and knocking down those shots, which opens things up for, say, a Doug McDermott to cut to the basket on a backdoor cut.
Yeah, and I think moving over to their bench has, like, it's become a really interesting part of their team. I felt like last year, there was always a focus on how their bench was probably only 2 or 3 legitimate, you know, players that they felt comfortable playing, because, you know, Lance Stephenson, while he was a big part of their bench, he was a net negative. His net rating was not as solid as some of the other players in the rotation last year. I feel like this year, they feel like they've solidified their bench more with McDermott and how positive of a factor he's been as a floor spacer and a, you know, someone who can create shots just by moving and cutting off the ball, and Domantas Sabonis. And while Tyreke Evans has struggled a lot, you know, individually in terms of shooting and finishing around the rim, he's built a nice relationship with Sabonis as just a, you know, pick and roll duo. And Corey Joseph obviously is one of the more solid defensive point guards in the league, one of the better backups. What has worked for this bench this year versus maybe last year, where they weren't as solid or as deep as they are this year?
I think simply you just have better talent, and some of the guys have been together for a little bit longer. Everything with that bench goes through Domantas Sabonis. He's been outstanding. He's a nice facilitator, much like his dad was in Portland. They'll give it to him, pick and rolls, or just throw it to him in the post. Sometimes attracts a double team. If he does, he'll pass his way out of it. If he doesn't, he'll use that skilled craftiness in the post and get a good look at it underneath, I think. The one guy that really hasn't worked out is Tyreke. I don't think that's been a good fit for either of the parties, just because of Tyreke is a ball-dominant guy. He needs the ball in his hands to succeed, and that's something the Pacers have not done with him for much of the season. Now, they have recently over the last week, and in doing so, Tyreke's been much better. He's scored 19 and 20 points in recent games. But you've seen solid play, I think, at the point guard spot with Corey. Doug's gotten better with each game, and for whatever reason, he's a much better shooter on the road, which is evened out to, I want to say, almost 50% shooting on the season because of that. TJ Leaf's giving you a little bit in his second year, but mostly you've just seen it. These players evolve and get a little bit better in total and more comfortable with each other. I think Sabonis is going to be an all-star. It's not a matter of if, only when, and that's an area where the Pacers have to decide on. Can you keep them both? Because this summer, Sabonis will be eligible for an extension on his rookie deal.
Yeah.
Can you pay two big men $18 and $20 million, or $18 and $16, let's say? Because they're already on the hook for Miles Turner at $18 million per year for the next four.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the more interesting stories in the NBA, just in general. Like, because, you know, you're paying Oladipo what you're paying him. I think it's around $20 million. Annually,
21 over the next two.
Okay, yep. So 21, and then, you know, Bogdanovich and Thaddeus Young are, you know, two key free agents. Darren Collison and Corey Joseph too are also free agents as well, and it feels like, you know, Thad and Boyan are going to be priorities for the Pacers in terms of just pursue who they're going to attack the most in terms of trying to re-sign. And Bogdanovich has played really well, averaged 21.3 points since Victor Oladipo went down with his injury, and he's, you know, maintained that efficiency. He's shooting 50.3% from the field overall, 40.3% from the three-point line. So he's definitely going to be someone that I could see, you know, teams really pursuing. And the Pacers historically have not been a heavy luxury tax team. I think they've only paid maybe two or three times, you know, the Jermaine O'Neal, Ron Artest era. I think they were a luxury tax team around that time. They hovered around it or near it when they had Paul George, Roy Hibbert, David West, et cetera, that team. They've sort of been a team that is very careful in terms of their spending. And I think the thing that people always focus on with Turner and Sabonis is, can they play together for a considerable amount of time in each game? And if your two best players are not on the floor most of the time together, then you're not really able to gain the most benefit from having, you know, such elite talent at that position. And especially in closing games, you know, there's pretty much always, a lot of times, besides some of the few games that they have finished together, like the OKC game that Sabonis and Turner played together, there are stretches where you're closing your game and one of your top three or four players is not playing because, you know, Sabonis and Turner are in that discussion for the Pacers. How do you think that is going to affect their offseason, just the focus on those two guys, and how do you pay both of them? But also, you know, they also do have a lot of free agents in other positions and sort of trying to fill out the rest of the roster around that situation.
Yeah, I don't envy Kevin Pritchard and his staff at all, because one big decision, Raphael, that they have to make is, do you run it back? Do you try to re-sign as many of these guys as you can and see what they can produce with another season with perhaps a healthy Victor Oladipo? That's a reasonable item to discuss, I think, at this point. We don't know necessarily how healthy Victor will be. Now, we can all assume the best, because this dude, no one's going to outwork him. He's already doing a lot down in Miami, where he's done his entire rehab. But that's something that the Pacers organization has to decide on. You mentioned the luxury tax. That's not going to be something they're willing to pay, so don't expect them to do anything like that. Pacers will not go under the luxury tax, especially if they're not a contending team. They're looking at those tier three, tier four free agents. One of them, you could argue, was J.J. Redick this past offseason, where he basically described to me that he was 5 minutes away from re-signing with the Pacers in free agency, but he ultimately went back to Philadelphia. So I thought that would have been an interesting pickup, because we've seen J.J. have a career year this year. The good news is Domas is under contract for next year, so you don't necessarily have to get something done this offseason, and his new contract wouldn't necessarily start until the following year. But you're right. You can't justify paying two high-priced centers if they're both not on the court a significant amount of time throughout games, in addition to a guy like Victor. And the guy I'm most curious about is Bojan Bogdanović, because especially in today's league, Raphael, how many teams would love to have a great shooter and competitor like Bojan is? You know he's available. This guy will play in every single game possible. He hates sitting out, and that includes practice. He's just a true gamer who loves basketball. And so he's a guy. I mean, if you're the Lakers, of course you want a guy like this. That'd be a guy that would be ideal playing alongside LeBron. So I think his price has gone up as he's had his best season of his career.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, you know, is impacted also by what happens in this first round series. I feel like before Oladipo, their goals were to at least win one playoff series. What do you feel about the team, and or the team, or how does the team feel about their goals for this playoffs, and what their expectations are? Are they tempered a little bit just because naturally they don't have their best player going into the playoffs?
Yeah, they kind of moved past that. That was the big thing that they had at the end of January. They lost four in a row. They were just feeling down and feeling sorry for themselves. I think they've really moved past that. We really don't talk about Victor around the team much at all, outside of, oh yeah, we exchanged texts or those things. They know he's focused on himself right now, as he should be. He had a serious injury that's similar, if not worse, to an Achilles tendon rupture that more of your audience would be familiar with than a quad tendon. This is not a regular ACL that, you know, it's 6 months this, 8 months this. This is what you should be doing. So he's down in Miami. As terms of the playoffs, I think winning one series is very realistic at this point, especially if they match up against Boston. Now that next round would be terribly difficult, I think, especially if they would face Toronto. That's a team that they haven't had very much success with in recent years, although more likely it would be Milwaukee. And there you have challenges of Giannis and some of those guys, but also what we've seen, three different guys for them go down in the last week. So who knows? At this point, you got to get past the Celtics, where I think they're very confident in their abilities because they thrive on their togetherness and their chemistry. And those are two attributes that are clearly lacking right now with that Boston team.
Yeah. And I guess one of the final questions, because, you know, it's been really interesting just hearing about, like, this team, but what has been the most interesting story for you to write about this team this season? I feel like, you know, from Oladipo's injury to the early start, mm-hmm. when they started playing well while he was injured initially, when he had, I think, a sore knee, and they started playing well and then he came back and they were playing well. Their season has had a lot of, I guess you would say, phases or moments. What has been your favorite story to write about this team this year? Or most interesting, or thing that's grabbed you the most? Yeah.
Yeah, no, so a lot of it is Victor, because he's the most interesting guy on the team. He's the guy that everyone wants to read about. So all those kind of do well. So one of the things I recently wrote was Quinn Cook, one of his high school teammates. He now plays for the Warriors. He writes VO4 in memory of Victor every game. He basically has said he dedicates this season to his childhood friend, and they talk and text probably every day. One of my recent stories I enjoyed was earlier this month, the Pacers had a basically take your mom to work trip. They flew their moms into Indianapolis, then the moms joined them on their charter flight to Milwaukee and got to experience what a day, what a trip is like for their kids and their sons. And then the other story I would say that comes to mind with this group is longtime assistant coach Dan Burke and what he means to this team. Larry Bird brought him in back in 1997. And you don't see many coaches stick around in the same role, the same situation with the same team, generally more than 3, 4, 5 years. Either they get a promotion or they move on or get fired. He's been here more than 20 years. So that was a guy I profiled earlier this year that I encourage people to take a look at.
Yeah, the Dan Burke story is really interesting, and I think just his story in general, I mean, to be there that long is something you just, like you said, you just don't see in sports in general, especially an assistant coach. Yeah.
Hey, Raphael, I should mention one other story. All your NBA fans would remember, like during the trade deadline, when fans were at Pacer games were chanting, LeBron's going to trade you, or earlier John Wall hates you. Well, those are Pacer fans, so one game I went up and watched the game with them, and wrote about it and explained kind of why they do that and even why they chanted overrated to Joel Embiid. It wasn't because they feel he's overrated. Certainly not. It's because if they believe if they can get a guy to pay attention to him, then that means they're checked out of the game and that gives the Pacers a one-up. So I really enjoyed it. That was just a fun, different thing to do that wasn't related necessarily to this team.
Yeah, and I mean, it was such a viral moment. I mean, I think the Lakers one especially, I think the Brandon Ingram free throws were the ones that sort of caught on with everyone, and it sort of gave all this notoriety. What's it like sitting in the stands with the fans while they're like yelling, chanting, and coming up with these ideas? Like for you, you're probably used to like, you know, being in the media section and sort of just, you know, everybody sort of just calm and chill. And so then you go into into the fan section where it's a lot more probably lively because, you know, everybody's sort of just trying to cheer and come up with ideas. What's that situation like going into that for a whole game?
In full disclosure, I didn't go up there for an entire game.
Oh, okay.
But I did do it for a period during the game. And there's two fan sections at Pacer games. They're provided a free ticket and another free ticket for a guest. And what impressed me most about this group was how coordinated and together they were. There weren't six different chants being shouted at the same time. One guy would kind of orchestrate it. Another guy might come up with something they should chant. And it was very organized and scripted. And before the game, they had all talked. They knew when this guy went to the free throw line, they were going to chant X. And so that was really cool for me to see. Because this is a situation, an arena, where the home team, the Pacers, really thrive off this home crowd. The Pacers last year, in fact, experimented with darkening the lights, the theater lighting, right, that we see in Brooklyn or the Lakers. And we had several Pacers complain because they couldn't see those fans. They felt like they weren't part of them anymore. And it's been a group that wants to feel connected to those rowdy fans. So that was cool to see.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, Scott, thanks so much for taking the time. I really appreciate you speaking with me. The Pacers, I feel like are a really interesting story in the league just because of where they are, their record, and sort of people's expectations for them have sort of not been very high, especially after the injury. Even before the injury, it felt like the expectations for them were not that high. So they've still, you know, kept it going. And I feel like, you know, like your writing on the team has been really interesting from like the stories you mentioned covering, you know, the fan base to some of the really interesting stories of those players and people around the organization. So thanks for taking the time, Scott. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Happy to be on with you, Raphael.
All right. This has been another edition of the NBA Trades Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter, NBA_trades. Like the page on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube. And I think that's it. So check it out, subscribe, rate and review. Really appreciate it, and take care.